Blog Talk Radio. This is Whirl with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. I'm here in New York City. On my time, it's like 8:30 p.m. It's really, really cold outside, but I have a feeling that a lot of this country there is. I'm in my house, so it's nice and warm, and of course, Esther. My rubber chicken is here with me. Well, she's somewhere. Yeah, she just wanted to make sure that she said hello to everybody as well. Well, I was just attending boot camp at the CIA. Well, no, not that CIA. It was the Culinary Institute of America. In Hyde Park. Yeah, I just wrote down on my thing, Culinary Institute of American. I have to change that. Well, as a writer, I have to change that. Okay. And so we're going to have, Chef Michael Skibitzky, let's see if I pronounced it correctly, he'll be talking with us. He was my teacher, the poor man who had to deal with my being there. Because I did bring Esther with me, and so we're going to talk about it was healthy cooking was the subject, and he should be on right now. Do I have you there?
Yeah, Merle, are you there?
Yes, hi, Chef.
I'm listening to you. And I wasn't sure if I was. I was on yet or not.
Yeah, I had to click you on. Open up your mic. Now you're
on
the
air. I heard your chicken, the same one you had in my class.
That's right. She was, as a matter of fact, I forgot, I wanted to let you know, she was just eating some gelato.
Oh, you missed the gelato. That was good. We had a couple more desserts the last couple days, too. You missed those, too. Sorry for you.
No. Actually, that's okay because I came home with some samples from the apple pie bakery cafe.
Right. Did you get home okay with those?
Yeah, I got home. But there was this wonderful chocolate chip cookie and a chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, right. Size of a hubcap, right?
I got to tell you, I mean, for anybody who's a chocoholic, These are the right kind of cookies to have.
Ginny must have known you. She must know you're a chocoholic.
Yes.
That's the mudslide. That's the famous mudslide cookie.
Oh, wow! I'm telling you.
Did you have your chocolate milk with that?
No, I don't have. I can't get chocolate milk like. See, I know when you're getting directly from like the dairy or whatever. It's really much different because I know it's almost like a pudding kind of thing. When I was in Niagara County, and Niagara Falls on this side, one of the places was also getting it from a dairy, and it really, really makes a difference. I really can't deal with. It's like I went someplace and. I said, can I have some chocolate milk? And they said, well, we have regular milk, and we can mix it up with syrup. I said, no, never mind.
Maybe on the Canadian side they had chocolate milk-producing cows. You're on the wrong side, Merle.
is that what you get from brown cows?
Yeah. No chocolate, right?
Yeah. But on that note, we're going to discuss the healthy cooking. But first, I want, before we get into the healthy cooking, I want you to introduce yourself to my audience and tell them what you do.
Okay. Hi, folks. This is Michael Skibitzky. I'm a chef instructor for 9 years at the Culinary Institute of America. And I teach a variety of classes in the continuing education department. Let's see, Mediterranean cuisines, Asian cuisines, healthy, a variety of boot camps. Let's see, what else, Merle? What else? All kind of skills, classes. And some of my, one of my favorites is doing a week or two of charcuterie in the Garmanger class.
Oh,
so,
really?
And the Americas, of course. Can't leave the Americas out.
Yeah.
And I travel quite a bit with the CIA, too. I just came back a couple months ago from teaching for 10 days in Jamaica at a resort.
Well, that's
resort.
Not far from where I live. I live in Woodhaven. No. Jamaica's just not that
far. That's right. Yeah. I should have called you up. We could have gone had dim sum down in your neighborhood there.
That's true. So, when you travel, so you travel to teach? Is that what you do?
Yes.
Or to learn?
Yeah. No, to teach.
Okay.
Yeah. I travel also to some different companies, like say Nestle's has a few courses that they want to teach or refresh to some of their employees and the food scientists and things and new healthy trends and stuff like that, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So I travel probably every 2 months I'm traveling, or last year I went to University of Northern Iowa and did a large refresher course for a lot of the staff there. In food service, I mean, it was very nice. We had a great time.
How long have you been into cooking, into this, and when did you start, like, professionally or getting into this?
Well, I started professionally. I graduated 3 years hotel school in London at Westminster Hotel School, and that was 71. So that's only I started. Let's see, I was 3 years there and cooking the whole time. So I'm on my 40th year, so I'm still a newcomer.
Oh, I see.
And that's the only thing I've done all my life is cooking. There's no other job. I started off after college. I went worked for the Savoy Hotels in London, and then I worked for a couple years for the Rue Brothers, and then 9 years for Four Seasons Hotels, and I was at the Pierre in New York. I was the chef of the United Nations, 88, Gorbachev and what have you. And I started teaching in California, in San Francisco. And then I also taught at Greystone, or the campus there. I've taught at the campus in San Antonio, and 9 years in Hyde Park here.
Wow.
So, and I love the teaching, so I was almost 30
years. Yeah, I was
going to
ask you about that. Do you like the teaching more than, let's say, being a chef at a restaurant?
Yeah. I did my 30 years of the line jockey thing, Merle.
Mm-hmm.
And after all that, it was time to pay back all we saw, did, and learned, and try and pass it on to the students of today. And I did so many great positions that I said, well, the only thing I haven't done is worked at a great school. And I set my sights on the CIA, got that position, and I couldn't have been happier. So I get to continue experimenting. I get to see so many great people every day, like yourself.
Yeah.
Always meeting so many nice new people, and it's every day is a new challenge, you know, because I teach either on the ply side, which is our bachelor students or our AOS all the degree programs. I teach certificate programs like the class you were in. We have a lot of the industry, like Aramark and the military. They're all sending people to us for training. So I'm always doing new things. And I'm always being challenged with creating new recipes, new dishes. And how much happier could I be? I'm not
sure.
In one place. I'm everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I've
got so many great colleagues, so
yeah.
So much to share.
Yeah, and I guess it's like it's an empowering job.
Yeah,
especially
it is, actually.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, a couple years ago, I got to do a party for Hillary at the Senate building in Washington. And
name dropping, huh?
Yeah, 2 years ago, I got to do one for California agriculture push and wines, what have you, for Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he went to Canada and did the whole thing up there. So I'm always doing something really interesting. This year I'll be traveling again to probably Jamaica one more time, definitely San Antonio. I will definitely be going to Ohio a few times, and that's just a few of the places.
Wow.
And that's very, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, let's get into what this whole thing was. So I just want everybody to know what I did is I went to boot camp for a day. Now, this was actually – did this end today?
Yes, it did end today.
Okay. There must have been some confusion when I was trying to do the radio show yesterday, and I didn't really speak to any of the women that attended. I had somebody else speak to them, and then I was getting feedback saying they couldn't come do the show last night because they were going home early or something, you know, they wanted to beat the storm. And I'm thinking,
right.
Wait a minute, did I miss, like, is there no Friday? Are they leaving early? I mean.
Yeah, I didn't even know. I came in today and the two, the mom and daughter from North Carolina, they were gone. You know, they rushed home to beat the storm. So I ended up, we still ran all the teams today. And we didn't cut anything on the menu, and we had a great time. In fact, I did a few more new dishes. Another whole grain pasta we made today, rigatoni. We did a mac and cheese using amaranth and quinoa pasta with, and I made a bechamel with that for a cheese sauce with no roux and no flour, so it was gluten free because. We wanted to at least have one gluten-free dish today, so we made the mac and cheese. Okay, it wasn't the lowest fat item in the book,
right?
But believe me, everybody loved it. It was just little regular milk, touch of cream. Don't say that too loud, okay?
Yeah.
couple egg yolks, so they were tempered and they wouldn't curdle. You see,
right?
And then the cheeses. We had two or three nice cheeses there. The pasta, we baked that for about 20 minutes, and you would have thought it was the full-leaded version of mac and cheese. It was really, really good, and it was gluten-free. There was no gluten at all.
Oh, cool.
So, and I'm sure there's a lot of your listeners that would be quite interested in that because everybody seems to know someone who has celiac symptoms or are celiacs or just wheat intolerances. So, you know, dishes like that, they're very, very good. It's nice to have a dish like that.
Yeah. Have you ever, I just thought of something. Like, have you ever, and I don't want to call it a diet, but let's call it a diet. Have you ever, like, said, okay, I'm going to put you on a diet. If you follow this, you'll lose weight.
Put somebody else or myself?
No, somebody else.
Over the years, I quite often will recommend a change in eating habits and with or without the exercise.
What I'm saying, not only like just recommend. In other words, like actually put out like a menu and recipes. Let's say this is what you should have for breakfast on day one, and or you know this is what you have for breakfast, snack, you know things like that. And some of the recipes.
Well, not quite to an individual, but I have done that to groups. I have taught several groups, like taught the U.S. Coast Guard a healthy class for a week. I've taught lots, probably over a dozen times in the last 2 years, teaching groups like the one you had or bigger. In fact, even 2 weeks from now, I have another group. And I will do a whole book full of recipes and menus, and we'll live that for a week. And I suppose you can take that with you, you know. Or I will steer somebody in the direction of a good diet. But I think the point of the class is to introduce a lot of the nutritional sense and a lot of new dishes, and make people think about how to start eating healthier again, you see?
Right.
You missed our lectures, because we do have almost 2 hours of lecture a day, and you do take a lot away with that, whether people are professional in the business or not, you know, or just cooks or chefs. They take a lot away from that.
Yeah, I don't know if you had a chance to look at my blog site yet. When you get a chance, and by the way, I have two of the YouTubes on there. I have the demo of cutting up a chicken, which Esther is not allowed to look at, and the other one of killing the lobster.
Oh, is it on there already?
Yes, it's on
Wow.
both my YouTube site and my blog site.
Now, I have the Blog Talk Radio site.
Well, that's the radio.
Okay,
that's the radio site.
I can't get to the YouTube from there, can I?
Well, if you're just talking on your phone, right?
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Oh, okay. And you have a computer in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, then just I'll tell you what to go to. Wait, go to. www.merlsworlds, you know how to spell that?
E-S-T-H-A-T.
M-E-R-L-E-S as in Sam.
Mm-hmm.
W-H-I-R-L-S.
Yes.
Sam. .blogspot, B-L-O-G-S-P-O-T, mm-hmm. .com.
Yes, I got it right there. Okay.
Okay.
So,
and you can see I have... everything, pretty much everything we did, the restaurants and all up there on the blog site.
Oh, that's great. Wow, that was fast.
Yeah, I worked on that last night.
You did the first lobster, not the second one.
No, yeah, I did the, because, you know, unfortunately, they needed me over at the station to help them, you know. Because every time you would go, oh, hello, everybody, I'm doing a demo here. In the meantime, we had to cook. So.
Oh, you were with Kay and her mom, right?
Yes.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
And
well, at least you were within shouting distance of me.
Yeah. So that's why was the second lobster any different? I mean, although I remember when you started it, you stuck the knife into its head, and all the water spurted out from its brain.
But at least that was pretty humane. At least you got to admit it only takes a split second, right?
That's true. I understand that. I probably won't do that, because I'm still not. It's like in my brain, I'm not clear that I'm going to hit the right spot and it'll kill them. So I just like. Throw some beer into a pot and say goodbye, shove them in, put the lid on, and walk away.
Yeah, and don't worry about a little screaming coming out of the pot, right?
No, it's funny that people say they don't scream. It's just something. No.
It's sometimes you hear a little noise. It's like air or building
I know
up, but they don't make any noise there.
I know they're not screaming, so... You know, it doesn't bother me, and but.
So did you had the lunch with us? So you had a real good variety of the dishes, probably 15 different things we made.
Oh yeah, and you could see that the photos on the blog spot. of all the food that we had. Did they tell you? But well, you know, it was funny because it was Lee's birthday. And
So we're gonna get a birthday cake.
Well, I started off. I didn't know what was gonna happen, so I had gotten this as a sampler. I got this, I guess, a small kind of cake from the bakery.
Okay.
From Apple Pie Bakery. And I said, you know, I'm going to save this because all I did, you know, I wanted to get some shots. And I said, I'm going to save this. It'll be perfect because of healthy eating, that it's a small thing and we each get a little taste and that's all. Well, Lee's daughter comes in with a cake. So she's got that plus. Oh, and then I had to, in transporting my little cake, you know, something happened to it. So I asked them if I could trade something in, and I got a jar of their vanilla rice pudding. I said,
okay,
that'll be great for everybody to share, get a little bit of that, not knowing this is going to be a cake. Now, the cake was outrageous. The cake had, it was like a hazelnut cream kind of thing on the top, and the middle had an orange marmalade, and the bottom had an almond paste. Now,
wow.
Let's add to this that then the waiter's coming around going, okay, and what would you like for dessert? And he comes to me after I get the dessert, after I order the dessert, he looks at me, he says, would you like a cup of coffee? And I say, oh, no, I'm on a diet.
I got to get back to the healthy class.
I couldn't help that. But anyway, so that I thought to myself, wow, all that class on healthy cooking, and look what we do. The end of the meal. But anyway,
I said to your poor classmates there, I said, you folks, your 4 days with me having all these healthy lunches, I go home at night and I'm just happy to have a little snack with my wife and call it a night. And you folks are going out to dinner after to all of the restaurants, you know, enjoying all this. I said, I don't know how you're doing it. Well, I said, you still have between 10 and 11 at night before you go to bed to go for a run or to the gym at the hotel. They laughed. You said, right, Chef, you go to bed.
Well, actually, you know, really what they should have done, I mean, when you're doing this kind of thing with this kind of boot camp, is that at the restaurants we go to, that the menu is set up that we're getting healthy cooking.
Oh, right, yes,
that
yes,
we're
yes.
getting foods that are moderated to be healthy cooking without even, and not even telling us.
Right.
It's moderated.
I'm glad you mentioned that because otherwise I think that you really had a lot of food on your plate or something, you know. But you do have, all our restaurants, the portions are very, very nicely done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But not only the portions, you're just not, you know, it's like when you were talking about, let's say that it's okay to have duck breast and no and no skin. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they should say to us, in other words, in what we're getting, kind of say, well, we recommend that you don't have the duck confit, that it's not part of your healthy cooking, however duck breast is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To or that something that we are getting, let's say that a dessert, that a couple of desserts are modified to make it healthier, and we don't necessarily have to, you know. In other words, they could say to us, these are the things that are recommended for your healthy cooking boot camp.
Right.
So that's just a suggestion because, I mean, I'm eating and I'm not even thinking twice as to, I'm just going at the menu and going, I want this. This sounds good. This will probably taste good. And not even thinking about, you know, what it's cooked with or anything. I'm just kind of saying
like
that. Yeah.
When you do the tasting in the class, right? There's there's 25 dishes there, and the first thing you said to me that day was, am I going to get to taste everything, right?
Yeah.
How am I going to know? And I said, wait, then when the table's all, there's two tables piled full of everyone's samples, and I said, here, Merle, here's your plate, right? I hand you a small plate, right, a little salad plate. I said, now, you can always come back, right? And you got a little of everything on there, and I don't know if you
no,
had
I didn't
any
go
spare
back.
Room on that plate.
No, yeah, and I didn't go back. I just want, I basically wanted to get a taste of certain things just to see, you know, like how they would taste. I didn't even realize, let's say, for instance, that the when you did the fried chicken, that even that fried chicken that was not modified was still healthier.
Right, and it certainly wasn't greasy. It was very, very clean oil, the right temperature, the right coating, and with the right temperature, clean, and the right coating, you will absorb less fat as well, and then even how you hold it after is drained on a wire rack instead of paper towels, a hot oven, and make sure that it doesn't sit in the grease. You know, it doesn't
no.
Absorb more grease.
Yeah. So I mean, so everything and the comment that I had made was, and I honestly mean this as a food critic, that if somebody came over there and said, hi, listen, I would like to order your food. And if they got the food, I don't think anybody would have said, this tastes funny, this doesn't taste good. They wouldn't have said anything. They would have just thought it was the typical great food that you get at any of the restaurants there. I couldn't believe how perfect everything came out.
Well, thank you. You should also, if you can remember, how much salt we use between a dozen people in the kitchen that day, probably, I don't know, a couple teaspoons between everybody, right?
Well,
for all those dishes. It was just the amount of flavor came from the reductions, natural reductions, the acids, the herbs, just reducing and layering the flavors.
And there was also the
color
salt,
was beautiful.
There was also the salt on the floor.
Oh, you remember that part? I had more salt on the floor when before we didn't want anybody to slip. We don't have time to wait for the mop. So before anybody falls, you always dust the floor. It's kind of like you feeding the chicken, right? You know,
right.
How you throw the feed down. We throw the salt down, you're back to work, and then somebody comes to clean up.
Yeah.
It's easy to sweep up and no accidents, you know. Safety is really the first thing before the food, of course.
Oh, sure. So let's get to like what you did day one, since I wasn't there. What'd you do in terms of food on day one, and what you focused on also in class?
Your day was.
I was there day two.
Great. Your day was your day braising and stewing.
No, I think that might have been first. Was that? I think that could have been first day.
Or your day was grilling, probably.
Oh, was there?
We go. The days are pretty much broken down by cooking techniques, like braising and stewing would be one day, and all the.
You know, you're right. Because
yeah,
I think about
dishes,
it, we did a lot of braising and stewing. We stewed a lot. Man, we were so pissed. No, I don't mean that. Kind of Yes, chef. You know, you could have been, what's his face, you know.
Yeah, your day with the chicken must have been dry heat and moist heat because, so that, your day was dry heat, moist heat cooking techniques. Another day is grilling and roasting day. Then we have stewing and braising day. Today was steaming, mostly steaming day today. Let me work backwards because I could probably remember easier what we did today.
Okay.
We had probably six or seven different grains. We had a bulgur wheat and a collard green pilaf with the mushroom reduction and roasted mushrooms. That was really, really good with the as a pilaf. And then
what
we had.
And what kind of mushrooms did you use?
We had some shiitakes and some white mushrooms, so we quartered those, and then they roast them, and then they had a little chicken stock, which with the mushrooms, then they turned into a nice gloss, a really nice reduction, and folded that into the cooked grains with, and actually they used that also to cook the greens in. So a little greens folded in, really, really tasty, unbelievable. No salt added at all, absolutely no need to, because as you remember, the chicken stock itself has the natural salt in the chicken bones itself, you know, like all the bones do. So when you make those reductions, you have enough salt already with one or two grains at the end, and you'd be amazed. So
in other words, you're saying, just as a tip for people, to make stocks that, in other words, there are a lot of times, let's say, that I go to, and especially if you go to an Asian market, they will have like chicken bones in a bag for a buck, you know, or pork bones, you know, things like that. That's great to make a stock, and then you don't have to add any salt. But just as an aside, if you want it, when you are making stocks using the bones, is there any other thing you should add to it, or just let the bones do its own thing and use it as a stock just like that?
Yeah, if I was to tell the listeners a very, very simple stock with, say, the chicken bones, we go with around 8 pounds of bones to 6 quarts of water, that's a gallon and a half. Mm-hmm. And then we put about a pound of veg in there. Mirepoix. Pound of vegetables. Mirepoix,
okay.
That's, you remember the mirepoix, 50% onions, 25% carrot, 25% celery. So if you think about a pound of those vegetables into the 6 quarts of water with the 8 pounds of bones, we bring that to a simmer, keep that going for 2 or 3 hours, nice and clean. Of course, you can put a little sachet in there, or the bouquet garni, remember the thyme and bay leaf, a couple
right.
peppercorns, and beautiful and clear. Never should boil, because if it just barely simmers at around 200, 205 degrees, it'll be crystal clear, and the odd skimming would be beautiful, really nice aroma. And that's it. Then when they're ready to use it, they restrained it. You could keep that in the fridge for a few days very easily, or freeze it. When you want to use it, take a few ladles, reduce it down, say with the mushrooms I was just talking about, and let that almost cook dry. Maybe do that 2 or 3 times, and each time it goes dry, it's producing a gloss, and it concentrates. And that's kind of like the way they make stock bases. They actually reduce and reduce until they get down to sometimes powders, sometimes a very, very gelatinous form, and that's where the salt concentrates.
Right.
And, you remember in our lecture, we talked about when you're using the stock, and you're costing out your nutritional portion. When I say costing, that was adding up the your fiber, your sodium, et cetera, et cetera. You can't forget how much salt there is in the stock. So you can't say there's zero in your dish because you didn't add salt. You have it in the stock already, and you have to know how much is in your stock. So the students have to be very careful about that.
Now, by the way, we're being joined. We have someone else on. Who we got there? Who's with us now?
This is Heather Kolakowski.
Okay. Just to let you know, you're joining us.
Oh.
Oh, great, wonderful. Great. Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you, Chef?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well.
Okay, so let's get that. Now, the question, I still want to talk about the class, but as I'm thinking of this, when you're using stocks, are there like certain stocks for certain things? In other words, like I noticed, like when you cook polenta, you would use a chicken stock.
Right.
Are there stocks that like recommended for? In other words, when you're making a stock, you're not necessarily going to combine bones, are you? In other words, pork
no.
bones and chicken bones.
No, we don't usually do that. It's a chicken stock, a white beef, a brown veal stock. Those are pretty much the basic ones. In a restaurant setting, you may do a simple stock from your pork bones, okay? Or it might be from your lamb bones, and then you want to use those specifically for that lamb dish or that pork dish,
okay?
But in your class a couple of days ago, we called for vegetable stock. Remember some of your teammates were saying, Chef, we need veg stock. We don't produce veg stock at the school. The veg stock is made on a need basis for your dish. That's why every time somebody asks for veg stock, they'll say, what dish are you doing? I'm doing something Provençal from the south of France, they'll say. I say, okay, what veg are you using today? Well, I'm using yellow and green zucchini. I'm using tomatoes. I'm using basil. I'm using celery root, et cetera, whatever they're using. I say, okay, well, take a couple handfuls of your scraps south of France. Let's sweat those scraps in with a little garlic, say, and a little olive oil. No color particularly, but a little. Just get some flavor out, a little fond on the bottom of the pan going. Deglaze. We don't want wine in there for what reason, but we do want water. So deglaze with 2 cups of water or something because you only need a cup or two for that dish. And then let it simmer for 10, 15 minutes. Strain it, and if there's a little too much, reduce it down, and there's your veg stock. That should take you how long? 20 minutes. There you go. Right. Let's go then. By the time, it took me longer to describe it, right?
Yeah.
They have a beautiful vegetable stock for that dish, something in Spain or something, whatever the part of the world. Remember, the whole menu every day is global, right? So the veg stock then would be designed right there on the spot for that dish.
Well, and let me ask you, and I'm just thinking about this, for instance, because when I watched you, like when you were cutting up the chicken, you took little parts and put it on the side, you know, and said, is this great to use in a, to make a stock with? Now,
right.
When you're cutting up vegetables, I mean, for instance, I'm just thinking, like, when I'm cutting up celery, I usually take off, like, at the bottom, toward the root, and I don't use
right.
that. Now, should I, in other words, like, save that for a stock?
Right, that's the best part, because you've got the heart down at the bottom, and
mm-hmm.
it's usually whiter. You don't want any leaves because they're bitter, and you don't want the greener parts at the top because that will give you a green color to your items and also
right.
a little bit of bitterness. So white of celery, and that's so keep that heart
right.
inside.
So in other words, kind of the parts that you wouldn't necessarily, like, serve.
Right. And if you look at that part that you probably want to discard, it looks like a cross-section of a piece of the root, like the celery root, right?
Right.
It's firm like that. It's solid.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly the best part for your stock.
Well, this is a great way also to conserve your food, too.
Right.
That the leftovers, so to speak, of what you're cutting up as and not throwing it out, but just using it as a stock, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a cool idea. So let's continue. Let's go back to the things that we were. Give us some ideas of like the things to substitute. The thing I learned, by the way, I have. I just want to let you. I've never used arrowroot before.
Okay.
And it was interesting to see that that the way that you're mixing arrowroot and was that our chef, our assistant?
Yeah, that was your assistant, yes.
Who was actually, he's only been there for a year? He's a one-year student?
Yeah, he's still a first-year student, right?
Yeah, which was, that was another thing, the assistants. I mean, they will absolutely knew exactly everything to do correctly, and they plated it right. I mean, you'd think they've been, like, there for years, really.
Right.
But he was the great thing was that he was showing me in terms of arrowroot that you have to like mix it with your finger,
right?
Kind of, you know, as opposed to, let's say, if I'm doing cornstarch with the cold water for a
mm-hmm.
mixture, while I'm not using my finger, I can, you know, it'll kind of melt into it.
Right.
Without lump.
You can use a little tiny whip or a spoon for either of them in the water, and then within a few seconds you pour that into your boiling liquid. The liquid has to boil because otherwise the starch won't thicken. And
right.
The main thing about the arrowroot, it gives you a clear, shiny finish, whereas the cornstarch gives you a cloudy, more custardy type finish.
Okay.
And
is there,
the arrowroot is about 4 or 5 times more costly as well.
Is there certain things you wouldn't use arrowroot for? In other words, let's say if I'm making chocolate pudding, would I use arrowroot instead of cornstarch?
No. In fact, you may even use another starch, like, say, tapioca starch for that. Or there's wheat starch we use for other things, too. There's quite a few starches which are available to us. So you have many choices. But we use the arrowroot mainly in fine reduction sauces where we may have 10 portions of sauce and we may have 2 cups of sauce, and it's still a little tiny bit too thin. It'll run on the plate. So we may take a teaspoon of the arrowroot, a couple teaspoons of water, and then just simmer that sauce for a few seconds and get that just that little bit of viscosity we want in the pan. So it's sort of
right.
it saves us, you know.
Right.
That's when we use the arrowroot pretty much.
Okay. So let's get back to some. I hope you don't mind that we're chatting.
No.
No,
is
I mean
Heather still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Oh, yeah, I'm listening. It's actually, I'm taking notes.
So let's get back to some of the other things that we were doing in terms of the healthy cooking. What were we, some of the things we substituted?
Okay, so definitely there was no salt flowing around freely other than the one that went on the floor to stop somebody slipping, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay. Fats. You remember our dressings? All of the dressings were low fat to because the standard dressings are 3 of oil to 1 of acid, okay, or vinegar, at 3-to-1 ratio. In our case, we had about a quarter percent, and 75% was non-fat. So that was like a stock that was sticking with the starch, extra herbs, extra things in the vinaigrette, and so really we took over 50% of the fat out of the dressings. In fact, some of the dressings had 90% fat free. Okay, we had the balsamic, we had the raspberry, we had one of our cheese and dairy. All of them had the really reduced fats, and then we put the even the Caesar, and then we put the control dressing next to it,
right.
And the control was the regular version. So and nobody ever has a problem with the lower fat. We work hard on those, you know. But they're not like the dressings you find in the store where
you see
all these particles suspended, and they have all they have gels and what have you in there and stabilizers. We don't do that, you know.
And by the way, in terms of the balsamic vinegar, do I get that there's really like 2 kinds? There's one like the real thing and the one that's like not the real thing, meaning the not real thing is it's really a lot of red wine vinegar and not real balsamic?
And sweetener, yeah. The real balsamic from Modena is the real one. In fact, it's not even really in the vinegar category. The real vinegars are acetic acid, and they go through a process and they become acetic acid vinegars, whereas the true balsamic is really like a dried sweet wine that got so sweet and aged, and so really it's not even in the vinegar family. But and it's on our list on our healthy because it doesn't act like a bad sugar for us, okay? And
oh,
it has
really?
A lot of flavor. That's right. So a lot of our dishes on the healthy side, not a lot, but several have the balsamic vinegar.
So,
and then of course we do tastings with 5-year, 10, 20, 50-year, 25, 50-year. You can even find a 75 and 100-year balsamic. Those are incredible. They're a little tiny bottle for a couple hundred dollars, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but those are the real ones. And you know that the real balsamic is done in a variety of different wooden barrels. You go from one barrel to the next every so often, every few years, and it goes from oak to chestnut to such and such, and then there's a distinct pattern that they go through. So there's a lot to true balsamic.
And I'm just curious, because I go to a lot of wineries that this part of my, you know, my travels, would I be asking, and the wineries usually, I mean, in the States, would the wineries in the United States even have this kind of balsamic vinegar?
They don't have the, you may find a couple of wineries mimicking a type of balsamic, but there are several wineries that are producing balsamic type vinegars with flavors like with fig and raspberry and other
right,
ones.
Yeah.
There's some really, really good ones. If you go to some of the gourmet stores and you see a variety, I've actually over the years, I buy quite a few of those, and I search for those, and I'll use those like in a special duck dish or a fish dish or something. It's incredible vinegars you find out there.
Hmm.
And a lot of them are really, really good. So don't be, and in the healthy, we do want acid in vinegars and citrus, because that takes your mind off and your palate away from looking for the salt the first bite you have. In
right.
fact, today they had the parfait with berries and granola with no added salt. It was drained yogurt. And I said to everybody around the table, what's on your palate now, folks, after they're halfway through that dessert? And they look at me like, oh, I don't know, yogurt, fruit, granola. I said, all I got in my mouth is salt right now. We cleaned our palate so well for 4 days of flavor and less salt that even a hint of salt that's naturally in the yogurt, I said, that's blasting my taste buds. And then they had to think about it, and then they could pick it out, you know.
Right.
So you become very, very sensitive to even a little salt when you start to cut down on that salt and you increase your flavors. You sort of clean your palate, you know.
Right,
the
yeah.
more salt you have, the more you want, okay?
Ah, that's interesting. I'll have to remember that. Of course, I remember the tasting we did, and I tasted the wrong thing instead of the salt water.
I remember something like that happening, and I said, oh, come on, let's get going here. Just stop fooling around. Lunch is in half an hour, Murrah. Let's go.
Well, I thought, really what I thought it was, because I didn't really look at it, I thought it was a little bit of like a tomato paste or something.
Uh-huh.
That's what I thought it was. I didn't think it was anything that was spicy at all. So I went, you know, what the hell? And
it was probably somebody reduced something there, and they walked away. You know how the burners are. That happens every day a couple of times, you know.
Oh, God. Give me the milk.
That's right. You got something spicy. You tasted the wrong thing.
Yes, that's what I mean. I tasted the wrong thing.
Oh, you tasted the chili sauce.
That's,
you know,
yes.
Physiology of taste lecture. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's what I'm saying. I'm
only yours wasn't numbered very well. That from one
no,
to eight.
I
that's
just,
right.
I,
yeah, 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 yeah.
I didn't have my special glasses on.
Did you tell everybody about your special glasses?
No, I didn't.
I'm already telling. I got to get a pair of those. That's
what
incredible.
What I need to do is I have to take a photo of that and put it on my blog site so people would know what it is or what to look for.
Right. You should also tell everybody that you come to my class, and in the first 5 minutes, you're pulling a rubber chicken out of your bag. And 5 minutes later, you're looking at the board, taking photographs, looking through these weird-looking glasses. And I said, oh, my God, what next? So, you know.
Well, I mean, but you're right. But the glasses are amazing, aren't they? And they're not even glasses. It's a syrup.
I know.
It's a syrup from a vodka company. But
yeah, it's
know.
The Bacchus tour, yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to send me a pair of those, I hope.
I'm going to find out. I'm going to go on the internet and see if I can find out where they sell them as a pair of glasses, because I've seen them in that form.
Oh, right, right.
And I probably should have bought it, but I, you know, when I read it, that it said, you know, you can use it, like, you have to make sure there's a certain amount of light. That's what I get. And and you can't use it, like, they say, not for driving.
Right, and you realize Heather has no idea what you're talking about, right?
I remember the chicken, because the chicken was on the table when you were dining, so I remember the chicken, but I don't remember the other.
Well, these are not, you have to picture it like it's a stirrer for a drink stirrer. And this vodka company was giving out these stirrers, but it was something like, if you put it in front of your eyes, there's like little holes in them. And if you focus through the little holes and looked at anything, it changed your vision. So regardless whether you're nearsighted or farsighted, it would allow you to focus on it without having to put on your regular glasses.
Oh, that's nice.
And they worked. I had to try them, didn't I? You remember?
Yeah.
Give me those. What are you doing over there? You're trying, Chef. Yeah, they worked. That's great. And now I'm telling everybody about them, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll see if I can find the company that makes them, you know. But anyway, so let's get back to this a little more. Did you join in when I was talking about what should be at the restaurant? So you didn't join in at that point, right?
No, not quite yet. We're still in service actually right now. So I didn't get a chance to hear.
We were commenting that that having this class, this boot camp on healthy cooking, that we're now going to the restaurants to eat, and we're not thinking about what we're eating. That it's not necessarily the healthy cooking, and at the restaurants, let's say when the boot camp is going on, this kind of boot camp to kind of be aware that which restaurant that the group is going to, and make sure there's things on the menu that are in the healthy cooking form.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, that doesn't have salt in it, you know, mm-hmm. or things like that. I knew to have the duck breast,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I didn't realize, no, you shouldn't have the confit.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, it can pose an interesting challenging for the restaurants, just because of there are lots of different types of boot camps that come through the CE department, and what we have with our limitations with the restaurants is it's really, you know, the learning environment is based on the repetition of the certain dishes that are already set on the menu. But for sure, I think that healthy cuisine is something that's becoming more and more of a focus as the population is aging, and as consciousness about special eating habits, or maybe allergies or dietary restrictions, or just the concept of changing what you're eating for a longer, happier life, is, you know, it's a little slow to trickle into some of the restaurants, particularly maybe the Escoffier room or the formal French, but you know, to have alternative options, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's just a thought that you can actually have, like, one of the restaurants, and I don't know, like, you know, I know you don't want to change one, but one restaurant that's all they specialize in optional cuisine, if you know what I'm saying, if you call it, like, healthy cuisine.
Mm-hmm. It actually, the St. Andrew's Cafe, originally when it was conceived in the 80s, was actually nutritional cooking. And when I went through the program back in 2000, we, part of the program itself was to analyze the dishes that we were making, And for a while there, they actually had the nutritional facts and information about every single dish that we had on our menu. But in the late 90s, early 2000s, less and less people were really interested in knowing what they were eating. it was almost like a guilt thing that, oh, okay, well, that's supposed to be better, but I really don't want to have that. I want to eat something else.
Yeah.
So we kind of you know, drifted away from that. But it's definitely been a turnaround recently. I have gotten more requests about, you know, more details about what's in the recipes and information about that, because I was over in St. Andrews as the maitre d' for a while before I moved to American Bounty. So, you know, that is definitely something that people are becoming more conscious about, particularly with the way legislation's going, requiring the menus being labeled, particularly in fast food restaurants or most restaurants in New York area.
Yeah, well, I won't eat at a fast food restaurant.
Well, that's a good thing.
But that's it. I
she likes to take her time.
Well, Well, other than that, I want to know what I'm eating. That's why, you know, especially I don't eat hamburgers out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know what's in the hamburger, in the meat. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't even buy hamburger meat at a store. I will buy the beef itself, and then, you know, make it into hamburger. I'll chop it myself.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Especially when you hear about 1,000 sources the meat's coming from, all goes to central areas, and then the one grind can be from 1,000 different animals. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if there's anything tainted, good luck. Plus,
yeah.
There's no mandatory recall of hamburgers. If there's a problem, it's up to the packer to recall it. There's no mandatory recall. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
That's,
I know.
A lot of power the meat lobby has. Yeah.
Yeah, Michael, you said you were working on a book.
Yes, I am. I'm working on actually two or three for the last year or so, and hopefully within 6 months to a year, I can get the first one out, and it's probably going to be the one I was talking about, the 60 favorite chicken recipes of the world, like global chicken recipes.
Oh, really?
Yep. And it seems like, well, everybody loves chicken, it seems, and to do with chicken.
Either that or everything tastes like chicken, so.
Or everything tastes like chicken, yeah. But a simple thing like chicken, just to have 60 great little recipes instead of like 300 recipes in a book and there's 5 chicken, and so this one's just going to be dedicated to chicken, breeds of chickens, et cetera, and some nice little stories about each recipe, you know, only 60. And then I'm trying to get a series of 60 favorites. So the next one would probably be either Mediterranean. Another one I'm trying to do at the same time as the Asian one I've been working on. So if there's trust from the consumer on that first 60 favorite chicken, then they'll say, wow, that was great. I used almost all of them, or I did use them all, and we trust the author. So let's the next one and the next one, and that could be a great little series.
Sure.
And not too big a book.
Yeah.
Not everybody wants to spend $70-$80 on a book, you know. So a lower price range and something very, very user-friendly. In fact, I'm trying to come up with some innovative new ideas for the for now that will be break some new ground and for a cookbook. See what the publishers come back with. Maybe some of the ideas they'll like, maybe they won't, but they're working with me on it right now, and so that's exciting. I even want to tie it into a web base too, so when you buy the book, you could go there, interactive, possibly wine pairings of the day or the week, dishes, blogs, so once you buy a book, you can become a member and join in. That would be very exciting.
And let me ask you a question, Michael. Have you eaten at all of the restaurants on the campus?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Oh, okay. So let's both of us talk about both of you guys, not me, because I haven't eaten at all of them. To talk about what each of the restaurants, let's say, specializes. What can you kind of expect from each of them? So let's start with the, well, let's see, when I was at the St. Andrew's Cafe, oh, my comment, by the way, because we had comment cards to fill out, and I think the comment cards were because I understood, I heard that these were new students or new graduates, or what was it?
Well, the way that the associate degree program works is the students, basically for the associate degree, it's about 18 months, and they spend the last part of that program filtering through the restaurants. So the students who were serving you in St. Andrews were three blocks away from graduating the associate degree program, and a block is approximately 3 weeks. And the students who were cooking your food in the American Bounty restaurant were two blocks away from graduating, and the students who served you in the American Bounty, they are one block away from graduating. So this is, from the service aspect, this is their last class in the associate degree program.
That was interesting, because with the when I filled up the cards, the card I was filling out, and I'm coming from a position of being a food critic, when I as a, in terms of as a writer, and what I kind of noticed, I mean, everything was plated well, everything was the food was served at the correct temperature for everything. I noticed that everything was cooked to order. Meaning, if you wanted it medium well, it came out medium well. Mm-hmm. I noticed that it was very innovative, and the service was great, and I enjoyed the fact that at both that restaurant and American Bounty, because those are the only two I went to, that they were doing French service, which mm-hmm. you don't see anymore. Mm-hmm.
Way to go.
Well, the way that it's kind of an interesting system, the way that we have set up for the restaurant, they call it restaurant row, and what it's designed is it's designed to give you kind of an in-depth understanding between the different styles of certain restaurants. So the students will go through and they'll be cooking in either the Caterina de' Medici restaurant or the St. Andrew's Cafe restaurant, and then move to the front of house for a period of time in that restaurant. So they would serve. Then they move on, and that's called the introductory table service class in the dining room.
Oh, cool.
Then they move on to the advanced table service class, and that is either in the American Bounty restaurant, which is considered more formal service, or the Escoffier room, which is truly, you know, French service with the synchronized service and cloches and tableside carving and
right.
you know, very, very lots of silverware.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their advanced restaurant experience. So it's designed to kind of give you a more casual feel in St. Andrews and Caterina de' Medici, the Italian restaurant, and a more advanced formal feel in American Bounty and the Escoffier room.
So now let's kind of go into, in terms of the just to distinguish what type of food. I mean, obviously you're going to get French food in the French restaurant, and you're going to get Italian food in the Italian
mm-hmm.
restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
yep.
So let's just say, for instance, in a French restaurant, should you expect, and I guess whether do they call it like Northern French and Southern French or?
Well, the French restaurant they have a selection of different specialties from all over France, and I do know it's kind of. You know, the chefs in the kitchen definitely have the influence of the dishes that are being produced. And in the Italian restaurant, the Caterina de' Medici, it's not your typical, you know, what most the general American public think of Italian. They think of the pasta, the southern-style Italian dishes, and really the items that are being featured in the Caterina de' Medici are of a northern style. They do have pastas, but you know it's also focused on the meats and entrees and you know salumis and things like that. So
right. So you're not going to, in other words, you're not going to necessarily just stick to like the lasagna and the
exactly.
and the tomato sauces.
Exactly. And in fact, I don't even think they have that in the restaurant.
Okay, which is like the Southern style kind of stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's more Northern style. And should you expect, like, in other words, in the French restaurant, which probably won't go nicely with the boot camp that I took,
healthy cuisine,
with all those French sauces and mm-hmm. heavy sauces, but would you, you know, is that what they kind of use, a lot of creams?
They do a lot of the traditional French style techniques, which usually relies on a lot of cream, a lot of butter, but definitely a wonderful opportunity to try something
sure.
that you may not have tried before, but in moderation, of course.
Yeah, but now Michael, like,
yes.
Can you, like, when you look at, let's say, the menu at the French restaurant and see that, do you have ideas in your head, like, how you can make it, like, make it healthier by using, like, certain substitutes that, like, if I ate it, I wouldn't, like, not know, but it wouldn't, I wouldn't, like, say, oh, this tastes, you know, I don't like the way this tastes. I'm, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Can you modify it?
Yeah, let me answer that quite easily. In the French cooking, you have pretty much four or five traditional regional cooking styles of France. You have the northern with a lot of cream up there, a lot of dairy, apples, cognac, cider, shellfish. You have a lot of heavier items because of that, and the cream and what have you. Up in the north, it's colder climate. And then you have the Parisian cooking in Paris in the middle, where you have always had the most money, and everything would come to the capital. And you had a lot of the real gourmet items and not so heavy either, but much more gourmet, okay, and not over heavy. And you have on the west coast, you have a lot of the ocean, you have more temperate climates as you're going a little south, and then you have a lot of influence from Spain down there, so you have some of your Spanish type of dishes. Obviously, not much cream anymore. You're getting down into olive oil country and what have you. And then you cross over to the south of France over in the Mediterranean side, and you're definitely in the south of France there with olives and vegetables and herbs, and it's much, much lighter. But
right.
Anywhere in France, you're going to get a duck confit. You're going to get sweetbreads. You're going to get puff pastry. You're going to have that everywhere. But basically, the south of France is where you're going to get the lighter styles. And when you think of cuisine mansur that was out in the 70s and nouvelle cuisine in the 70s and 80s, and every few years there'd be a new way of eating in the French menu. And every time it got a little bit lighter, we still used the same ingredients. Sometimes we just cut the portions down. But that's when we did a lot of the reductions, and we still do now without the extra, the roux and the fat, and extra fats, and make them lighter. And then maybe that's when you're going to use a little bit of your arrowroot. Maybe we're going to thicken some of our sauces with little vegetable purees that we dehydrated or so for flavor and lightness. But no matter, the French cooking does not have to be heavy. It can be very, very light, and you get to try everything. I don't know, the escargot with the garlic butter is kind of hard to beat, though, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you do want snails, you don't have to drink all the butter, but you can leave some of the butter behind, right? Does that answer that question?
Sure,
a little bit?
Sure it does. Now before I get into the Italian restaurant, I just want to take one quick break for my sponsor.
Okay. Is there anybody else out there, or is it just you, Heather, and me here?
Well, here comes my sponsor, and please don't drool.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yes, everybody, and you can get these brownies at brownies.com, and right now they're still having a sale on their Valentine brownies. They're not actually brownies. They are truffles. They are small little brownies, and it's bad enough that they already taste like fudge. They're enrobed with Calbo dark chocolate, too, and in flavors. Talk about boot camp. This is something we would...
You'd need a boot camp after those.
Yeah,
it'd
you're
be
not
worth
kidding.
It.
I have found these brownies. I was at a chocolate show, and this company, Fairy Tale Brownies, who was out in Phoenix, was there, and they would what they would do. They would be sponsoring breakfast for the media, whatever. And it was really nice because you got up to this place at like 10 o'clock in the morning, and you're shoving chocolate down your throat, you know what I mean? And so it was nice that they would have breakfast, and they'd have bagels and lox and all kinds of stuff like that. This way, you know, it could start you off with something else. But in the meantime, the brownies themselves, they are so outrageously good. There's nobody tops the brownies. I'm sorry, but even your bakery. Although I wanted to share something about the bakery, by the way. I was doing a taste test on cookies because we had gone to a place called Baby Cakes Cafe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right
and,
by that.
Yeah, and so I got a chocolate chip cookie to take home. And I wanted to compare it to the chocolate chip cookie that I'd gotten from Apple Pie Bakery, you know. So I got to tell you, I mean, like, talk about someone who's a chocoholic. I mean, Baby Cakes was excellent. I'm not saying they weren't good. They were really good. But when I got into the other chocolate chip cookie, I'm going, you can't, like, there's no, nothing, you can't miss a chocolate chip. You can't miss having a mouthful of the chocolate chips. And the cookie itself was done just the way I like it, like just a little crunchy on the outside and nice and soft, you know. But anyway, which is also not on the list of
healthy cuisine.
I just thought I'd throw that in.
Merle, that cookie, you cook it for 30 seconds to a minute too long, and then the whole thing dries out, okay? So they've got to be slightly underbaked, just like good brownies. You've got to slightly underbake them, yeah.
Ah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I would like to at some time... I'm going to be actually back up in Dutchess County. I'm doing this like coming up there once per season. And it would be interesting that each time, I mean, I want to, of course, be able to eat in another restaurant. But even more interesting, I'd like to like be able to learn something else. And one of the questions that I do have, because in terms of the writing and the publishing, now I don't intend to publish the recipes. I mean, you know, I have them in the loose leaf.
Right.
But is it okay to publish, let's say, the contents? I don't have to say a quarter cup of or whatever. But in other words, when I say we made this and this is what went into it, as opposed to the amounts and then how to cook it, is that okay to share that?
Yeah, I think let's just back up for a second. A recipe, as long as it's not a photocopy of the recipe, and it's say you rewrote it, and you could publish that. And
okay.
Especially if you give credit to where the recipe came from.
Oh yeah, no, I'm going to say these.
Share the
in other
source,
words,
yeah.
What I'm going to be writing about is these are the recipes. This is what we were cooking during boot camp. And as opposed to giving the recipe, like telling people, like, how much of it to use and how to make it, I'm kind of going to say, like, this is went into the tuna, blah, blah, blah. These are the contents, but not the amount.
Because you're not reproducing the recipe.
No.
Like a photocopy.
Right.
Credit to it, and you're just highlighting it with the ingredients.
Especially let's say if I want to do something, this is what the Caesar dressing, the modified Caesar dressing, but not not the amounts, but like the contents.
Right.
Okay.
And to highlight that the regular Caesar would be this much fat proportion to this much acid or something, and the new one or the modified is only 25% of the fats and other ingredients were such and such. Yeah, there's no problem with that.
Okay. So let's now get to the in terms of the Italian restaurant. Now, in terms of that's one of the, like, for me, it's like one of the last restaurants that I go out to eat. I almost because I have found in terms of cooking that to me it winds up being like the easiest to cook, as opposed to having to go out and say, well, I'm really not in, I don't want to do a Filipino dish at home, so I'm going to go to a Filipino restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of Italian, it's, I don't find that I need to do that. But then again, I guess a lot of it has, I've learned to cook mostly with, I guess if you want to call it the Southern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you basically learn to make your own sauce. It boils down to, if you can make great tomato sauce,
you can get a good pasta.
That's it.
Right.
You know, and I have a pasta machine at home.
Mm-hmm. So you can make your own pasta, which is always fun.
Yeah. But by the way, I also learned how to make mozzarella.
Ooh, that's good.
And here is the interesting thing that I found out about this, because I have, there's a store in, near my neighborhood, and the guy makes fresh mozzarella 2-3 times a day. And I made this, what I would do is I'd sometimes go to him and say, do me a favor, because he basically told me how to make it. And I said, you know, instead of, I don't want to bring home the fresh mozzarella, sell me the milk curd. So he would sell me the milk curd. This way I could break it down into portions and freeze them. And so every time I wanted to make the fresh mozzarella, you know, I could do that. Well, then I get to find it after years, because I said to him, where do you get the milk curd from, like, Polio? He says, oh, no. He says, I get it from a dairy farm upstate. And I'm assuming that he meant that he gets the milk curd, but he doesn't. He's getting the milk, and he's doing the whole thing at his store, and breaking it into the mozzarella and the ricotta cheese. So he said to me, which I thought was interesting, he says, when you go to a place and they say they make fresh mozzarella, they're not. They're reconstituting it. I said, oh, look at that. That's, you know, never thought about that.
But you know, he's absolutely right. You can find recipes to make your own mozzarella from the milk, okay?
Yeah.
And you won't have good results, because you do need the farm fresh milk right from the farm, okay?
Yes.
So that's very creditable and believable, because I've done the recipe over the years. And if the milk wasn't really, really good and fresh, you couldn't get the cheese out of it. And then over the years, many, many times, hundreds of times, obviously buying the curd from Polio, et cetera, and still getting a fantastic result. So,
yeah.
But both ways, very, very good.
So, so what had happened actually is a few years ago, I was on a press trip, and I went to Naples and the Amalfi Coast, and that was the first time I had real pizza. And I went, oh, is that what
this
pizza
is? What they mean.
And it's funny because that's the pizza that I crave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, doesn't anybody make a decent pizza, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I like a thin crust. I like a thin crust,
right.
You know, and not have to break my teeth on it either.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, pizza's very, you know, if you think about it, pizza's a very personal, emotional
yes,
dish. And the thing is you've got the mass-produced pizza that comes from organizations that, you know, are basically mass-producing it. And there's all different types. And,
right.
And it appeals to different people. You know, certain people will fight over the different sauces and whether
mm-hmm.
or not this is the right sauce or not. And then the debate about the crust is
oh, yeah.
going all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
So
no, I realize that.
You
know,
each pizza is very personal.
Yeah.
Have
you ever, I once tried, because I went to a restaurant that did this, and I made a pizza, and what I used flour and beer for the crust.
Okay.
It came out great.
You didn't have any yeast in it?
No.
No.
The yeast and the beer.
Yours probably came out really flat, nice and thin and flat.
Yes.
And obviously crispened up very well, almost like a tortilla, okay?
Yeah, but it wasn't. It still maintained a little bit of the doughiness. Still had enough of the doughiness. I mean, you have to, like first bake the crust like at least halfway through, and then put
okay.
whatever you want on top of it, and then shove it back in the oven. But you know, for me, it was like, okay, that's what I want, you know, thin crust.
Did you ever hear of Eddie's Pizzas out on the island?
No, what island?
Your island. That's the Long Island. The long one.
Okay.
There's a guy, Eddie's
yeah.
Pizza. He's like down in Roslyn or somewhere or on the shore, and he supplies half the island with these pizza shells. They're called Eddie's shells, and they're this like a 12-inch shell, and it's as thin as a tortilla shell. And everybody on the islands, practically for years now, they buy from him, and they build their pizzas right on there, throw them in the oven, and it's paper thin, and people love that crust on. Everybody on Long Island probably knows of Eddie's Pizzas.
I guess I'll have to get in touch with him now.
Yeah, you gotta call Eddie.
Okay, yeah. So let's get back into this. What are some of the specialties that they have at I keep forgetting the Magic.
Catarina.
Catarina.
Oh, Catarina. Yeah. What are some of the specialties? Like if you were saying to me, oh, you must try the such and such.
Chef, do you have any particular? I know my favorite right off the top.
What's your favorite?
The risotto. I've never been able to make a risotto that has the perfect balance of the tenderness of the rice and the creaminess of like the sauce that goes with it. I've never been able to do it. So whenever I go to Catarina, I'm always ordering their risotto in the large portion.
Right. You're absolutely right. And in our healthy class, we were talking today about risotto. We had risotto in our lecture and PowerPoints and talking about the risotto method. But then everything that Heather just said that's fantastic about a risotto really doesn't fit into the healthy okay. There's no fiber. There's no bran on the outside of the rice. You do want the creaminess and the cream, et cetera. So only the method fit into our healthy, but not the actual risotto. And the risotto is a cooking method, you know, the constant stirring and the getting the creaminess. So kind of an oxymoron when it came to healthy, but the students, they need to understand that in order to do similar grains, healthy ones today, the risotto method, okay, but that was today anyway. You missed that.
And what are the favorites?
I like the northern Italian style dishes, like the veal scallopinis they have there. They have really good veal. I do like the peaches. They're doing really, really good peaches. They have the brick oven, wood-fired oven there, and they are thin, and they come out really nice and blistered and crispy. So if you didn't get pizza there, Merle, you need to try it there again.
Okay.
And even when they do the pizzas in the St. Andrews, they have another wood-fired oven over there, and do really, really good pizzas. And they're using their own charcuterie on some of those pizzas in the St. Andrews. So really, really good. You probably had them over there, Heather.
Yeah, when I was working
job,
over
yeah.
there, the pizza was definitely. But they actually, one of the chefs and the maitre d' instructor over in the Caterina de' Medici restaurant just completed and published a book called, I don't want to butcher the Italian, but Tavola. And it's basically recipes and reflections on traditional Italian home cooking. And it was written by the maitre d' in the front of house, who is Vincenzo Loria, and then the chef in the kitchen, Chef Scapine. They are from the Veneto, Chef Scapine is from the Veneto region, and he was bringing, you know, recipes that they were cooking at home, and Mr. Loria was writing stories, because he's from around the Naples region, stories about the different dishes, and that's actually something that's out in the bookstores now that has some fabulous pictures. Just makes me hungry just looking at them. And then little stories that they have associated with all the dishes.
I have to try that. I think so that the French, I don't know if I ate at the French restaurant when I first was there. I think I was 1995, I think. That's when I did an article. I'm not sure which restaurant that I went to, but mm-hmm. So I don't think so. I will have to try definitely the French and the Italian restaurant, and I'm trying to do something a little more modified.
Well, the really interesting thing about the one restaurant that you were able to eat, because you were able to eat in St. Andrews, correct?
Yes.
Yes, the interesting thing that St. Andrews is kind of changing their concept right now, and they're focusing on sustainable to try and get local products to feature in that restaurant, but also to really look at the way that it is affecting the global environment, I guess you would say. And they've started the certification to become a green restaurant through the Green Restaurant Association. So they're definitely working on changing that concept, and they're focusing on doing house-made charcuterie products and utilizing all the pieces of the meat that they get to fabricate out for the different dishes. And it's something that's caused a lot of buzz of excitement on the campus, and excitement for the students, because this is something that many, many restaurants are starting to do, is to focus on sustainable and local agriculture, although in the winter time in the Hudson Valley it is a challenge.
Right, yeah.
To find those. You want to stay away from just root vegetables, but they've definitely been changing that concept to try and fit that, to be able to expose the students to it, because it's really an up-and-coming thing that's I think many of the restaurants are going to be focusing on in the future, to be able to support the local environment.
So would I be better off coming in the summer or the fall to have the most of the local, produce
harvest
and stuff?
The Hudson Valley growing season really picks up late June, July, and August. Unfortunately, the school is closed for our summer break pretty much the majority of July, but we come back very strong in August and September. And
when it's closed, that means also the restaurants are closed.
Right, because the students are the ones who are going through who run the restaurants. So,
okay.
But in August and September, that's really when, the growing season is at its peak here in the Hudson Valley. And we have a wonderful relationship with the local farmers to try and bring their products in to feature them here at the school, and we're constantly getting updates from Paul in the storeroom, letting us know what's out there and what's good this week and what we should really focus on and utilize. And it's almost which chef can contact them the fastest to be able to get this wonderful produce that they've gotten into the storeroom so that they can use it in their kitchen. So it's definitely during that time. I mean, Chef, would you be on the same page along those, that August and September and into October is a wonderful time for products in the local area?
Right. The produce, you've got your abundance is in July and August and September. We're still using a lot of the produce in the like the beans that are left over and a lot of this. Right now we're still getting all the squashes and things from local. There's plenty of things that are still local. Our herbs are still local. We're still getting local fish, our cheeses, Coach Farm, and everyone else. There's a lot of great dairies. We've got the we have one or two of our pork producers, lamb producers. They're all in Hudson Valley. So and this only happened in the last 6 to 9 months, right, Heather?
Right.
So
right.
We're actually doing a very, very good job at that. And there was one other one. Hudson Valley with our foie gras and the duck and our Hudson Valley ducks and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
There are other poultry farms we have in Hudson Valley as well. And then remember, apples are really big in New York State. We have plenty of apples and pears, so there is an abundance even right now, and it's middle of the winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was up in Niagara County, and I had apples up there. I went right to the farms.
Mm-hmm.
They had some wonderful, great apples there.
Don't forget, we have the oldest oldest winery in America in, half an hour south of us. Do you know, Heather? Can you remember?
Wine? No.
It's only
of
20.
Here.
Yeah, I know. They're 20 minutes south of us. It's the oldest wine in America. We've got Millbrook, which is one of the winning lots of awards right now. And in fact, Millbrook is got awards for some vine growing systems that they're using in California right now, invented here in Millbrook. So there's a couple over in New Paltz area. We have a lot of wineries here.
We've got the Brotherhood.
Yes, I was trying to think that too. I think I remember going there. Oh God, I was like 18, 19 years old. First time I went there.
Because we're thinking locally. Some people do, and I think, well, we're not growing anything here. We're growing plenty here, and we've got the wines and everything else. So. Just because we've chose Hudson Valley for the restaurant, there's plenty of great stuff for us, they are doing a good job.
I'm just waiting for New York to grow rice someplace.
That might be challenging
because I want the sake. That's what I like.
Mm.
Yeah, Heather, I was saying that I had gone to in California in Folsom. And Geika Khan has their plant out there.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I have they had sent me a few bottles, thank goodness. but they said that they are there because of the water in that region.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting tasting, I guess, the local, meaning, you know, U.S. Sake versus the imported. And it was really, I mean, refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
Had a very refreshing taste to it.
And sake is such an up-and-coming beverage that you see. And it's amazing. I teach a beverage management class,
mm-hmm.
an elective for the bachelor students. And one of the days we go over fermented beverages. And, you know, since sake is the way that it's produced, a lot of people think it's a spirit. like you would see a rum or bourbon, something like that. But it, you know, it's not. And as you know, it's not. It's a fermented. It's more than a, it's more like a rice beer.
Right. It's brewed like beer.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it's just it's as diverse. The sake production is as diverse as wine production, and I think a lot of Americans don't realize that it's so diverse. They just think of the sake heaters and sake bombs and something that's really harsh, but it has so many different delicate flavor profiles and variations that it's kind of a big ocean of sake.
I kind of started with that. You know who Rocky Aoki is? Rocky Aoki is the guy who owns the Benihanas, who started the whole thing.
Right.
Well, this all started. He had a sake tasting at one of his restaurants, and he attended that. And by the time I was done with that, I also got him to come and do a coin toss for the New York Sharks and the football.
Right.
Well, only because we had. A woman from Japan came to New York just to play for the New York Sharks, simply because she wanted to play football for the New York Sharks. And so, you know, I said, "Well, let's get Rocky Aoki here to do a coin toss." But I got that that none of the places on the campus have sake, huh?
No, we do not. That's definitely something that many of at least the dining room instructors, because most of us have a passion for beverages and service and different, you know, cultures and cuisines, because we are definitely an international school. We're pushing to try and develop a further beverage program and see, you know, where it could fit in.
Right.
To be able to at least expose the students to this wonderful information and let them know that it's out there.
The other thing I thought was kind of odd. While I was eating and whatever, I was trying to find rooibos tea, and everybody kept on saying there isn't any rooibos tea. And then I'm thinking to myself, okay. And what happened? You know, I was looking on the menu at the apple pie. Mm-hmm. Bakery, and it said something. It said African solstice.
Right, and that's a.
And I said,
I
said, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. maybe they don't know what rooibos tea is.
Right, it's the teas that they use in the apple pie. They use teas from a company called Tea Forte, and they are able to use because the Tea Forte has these little pyramid shaped bags.
Oh, yes, yeah.
With the steeping, and they have over 12 different varieties of tea that they have in the apple pie. So the rooibos is the one that they use there, and that truly has very, very wonderful health properties.
It's the only tea I drink.
Right, and the Tea Forte blends that they do, the African Solstice, is just this exotic, exciting... almost, I don't know, Wicked comes to mind. I don't know why, but when you taste it, it's just transporting. It's really, really delicious.
Yeah. And in the other restaurants, are they using a different brand?
Right. We use a company called Serendipity.
Serendipity, yeah. I know the owner of that. I think she was at, it's funny, because she was at a, she would attend the chocolate show.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have the little, you know, chocolate nibs.
Mm-hmm.
In some of the teas,
right? They have it in the mixtures.
Yeah, and that's how I got to meet them. But they do, and they do have rooibos. They have a lot of rooibos, but they have a lot of mixtures with rooibos as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time I had that, I was on a press trip in South Africa, and I remember I took a box of it home. I bought a box, took it home, thinking I'll never see it again.
Right.
And thank God it came to the United States.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's one of the hidden gems of the tea world, I think.
Yeah, and it's, they say it has more antioxidants than blueberries, too.
Mm-hmm. Very, 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 lots of strengthening properties for it.
We use the green tea in the gelato and sorbets and ice cream too a lot.
There's no gelato. I asked all over the place just to make sure.
On occasion. I didn't know you were a gelato lover. I would have had some. But listen to this. Now you're talking about sake before. What do you think I'm making this weekend already? I'm actually making rice wine, and the first batch will come off as a rice wine, a very, very sweet rice wine, which I make for my Asian class a couple weeks from now.
Really?
I have a few dishes. I need my own rice wine for that. And then when I do a second wedding, it comes out like dry sherry slash sake, okay? And you'd think it was sake or dry sherry, and it's actually leans much more towards sake. And if I distill it, the second wedding, it definitely is 100% sake. And I'm actually using some purple rice in my mixture because I want to actually just change the color just to see how it comes out with the purple. But and it takes about 4 to 5 days to get the first batch, and it'll sit at room temperature. And I'll bring some in for you next week or the week after, Heather, and you can taste it. The sweet one is really, really, really nice, especially in a few of my Chinese dishes. And then the second wedding, you see how much drier it is because all the sweetness came out in the first batch. Mm-hmm. And then it can also be distilled at home, but we won't tell everybody how to do that.
Of course not, because that's illegal.
That's Merle. That's our secret, Merle.
You know, when I come back in the springtime, I'm gonna stop. When I stop by there, I'll let you know. You know when I'm coming back, and Mikey will have to, you know, make a batch.
I absolutely will.
And
I'll show you how to make it in the kitchen.
Really? You have to do that.
Then you're going to tell everybody and we're going to get locked up.
No,
Merle.
I wouldn't tell them. No, are you kidding? I wouldn't give that secret away.
Listen, Merle, when you come back in the spring or the summer to do my healthy class, one of the dining nights, you know what I'm going to do? You saw the garden out by St. Andrews there?
Yeah.
Not the St. Andrews one, but the major garden between the library and the Katerina.
Yeah.
So one of those nights, I'm just going to take you guys out there for a half hour, and there's your dinner. There's the garden. Go for it.
Well, did you see the Iron Chef? Not Iron Chef. Is it Iron? What's that one on? You know what I'm talking about?
Iron Chef or Iron Chef?
Iron
the one
Chef.
That used to be in Japan or the
new one,
the American one.
Yeah, and they had one where they had actually gone. They had actually gone to the White House garden.
Okay.
And that was the secret ingredient was whatever you got from the produce and the garden in the White House.
That's challenging.
No, I didn't see that one. No,
it was a hoot. Yeah, because and it was interesting because like I thought, yeah, well, you know, given the opportunity, what would you do? I think I went to when I was in on the other side of Niagara Falls. I was not Niagara. I went to Niagara Lake. And they have a lot of wineries and farms. And I did do like a cooking class at one of the places. And out in the backyard there, and you got to pick the herbs and stuff like that. I think that is cool when you can go to a place and the produce is right there to use. You know?
Well, Merle, you should do a couple of days out at Greystone. Our campus in Napa, because we do have a really extensive herb garden, and it's in sections. It's an Asian section, a South American section, a North American section, a European section, North African, and we have hundreds of different herbs there. And the classes actually go out day and night to the garden and pick what they need for their class. And so if you're doing say, North African, and you need Moroccan mint for the Moroccan tea, the actual Moroccan mint is out there. If you're doing an Asian class and you need kaffir lime leaves, that one of the 10 citruses out there is kaffir limes, okay? You need fish mint. You need cilantro. You need lemongrass. It's all growing out there, okay? That's a small enough campus, and the classes won't wipe out the produce, and there's two or three gardeners just keep it going for the classes. So it's really what you were just saying. It's a lot of fun. It's really, really fresh. And as soon as someone says, I don't have something, say, well, go down the elevator or take the stairs, three floors down. You remember the garden we showed you on the first day? That's where it was. Oh, yeah. Simple as that.
That's a great idea. Maybe you would know this then. When I was doing a Florida, Central Florida tour, and we stopped at some place, and they had a garden there, and one of the things they had growing, I guess it's an herb, what would happen is that if you tasted it, it would make whatever you would eat sweet, taste sweet.
Miracle
right,
berry.
What is it?
It's the miracle berry?
Yeah. Is that what it's called?
Right. They use it. It's a very interesting thing. We've actually had tastings of it on campus. And a lot of times they use it for patients that are undergoing chemotherapy treatments that really affects your palate and the way you can taste things. It makes, you know, when you go through those cancer treatments, a lot of times the food is no longer taste good because you can't register all the different flavors and actually taste bitter. So this miracle berry that you use, you can take it in the pill form, which is a little bit cheaper, but you also can actually take the berry itself and crush it and chew it. And it has some sort of chemical reaction with the tongue and the taste buds on the tongue. And for about 25 to 30 minutes after you eat the miracle berry, anything you put in your mouth is sweet. And we did a tasting with the students, and we had a lemon slice and a little bit of vinegar and an olive, all on the plate for them to taste. And they had, you know exactly what a lemon would taste like. And the students would taste the miracle berry and taste the lemon, and it would taste sweet. And it was just, it was crazy.
I saw that grown there. Where would you find these as opposed to the pill form? Where would you like?
I think the ones that we received, we ordered them online, but I can't remember off the top of my head which company we were using to get them. But they tend to be very, very expensive in the whole fresh form.
Uh-huh.
But I can take a look and see and let you know exactly which company we were using.
You wouldn't necessarily use it, let's say, you know, like you want your coffee to taste sweet, so you...
No. It's definitely
I don't mean to put in the coffee. In other words, you now, like, taste it, and then now you're drinking coffee because you want the...
Right. No, it's more of, for those of us who are just kind of food enthusiasts, it's more of a fun, fascinating thing to try, not something you necessarily would use in your regular food consumption.
Oh, okay. It's like sucking up helium from a helium balloon, huh?
Exactly. Fun yes. Every once in a while, but probably don't want to do it all the time.
Yeah. We represent.
You know who might have those? If you Google probably Earthy Delights might be a good source for that.
Earthy Delights?
Try and find that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Earthy Delights, they're in, I can't quite remember where they were, either Michigan or Chicago area, but they have specials from all around the world. Good source.
Yeah, okay. Because, that'd be a hoot to do, also something interesting to write about, saying I done.
Right.
Yeah, when I was there in Florida, when we saw this, there was nothing that was, it wasn't in season at the time. So it wasn't, we didn't have, there was no opportunity to taste it and to see, how it worked. you know, we had to just say, yeah, okay, he said so. But you know, it was a thought with me, especially, you know, for I have a sweet tooth, and that would be a great thing, you know, to handle. And or for instance, like, oh yeah, that would be actually that would be good for me to like have that, and then eat broccoli rabe.
Exactly, because then you won't be tasting the broccoli rabe.
Yeah. Mhm. Or Passover, right before the bitter herb. of course, broccoli rabe should be the one for the bitter herb. I mean, yeah. Anyway, I don't know which.
What do you use the horseradish for that?
I don't think the horseradish. I think it winds up being parsley, which is not really
bitter.
You know, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've tasted worse, like collard greens, maybe.
Yeah. That's for the Seder plate, right?
Yeah, for the Seder plate. I don't know who came up with parsley as the bitter herb. I mean, I think there's worse.
And you got to have the apples and the beet juice or something? I can't remember now.
Well, yeah, you're chopping up apples and I think like nuts, usually walnuts, I believe. Apples,
Rosa,
walnuts, and wine.
Yeah, right.
To make the mortar, like, you know, the, as they call it, the horosis.
Right, horosis, yeah.
Yeah. And, well, that's not too bad. I mean, I've learned to make a decent one. Everybody goes, oh, let me have some more. Can we eat the rest of it? So, but, well, do we have, is there anything else, like, that we could add to all this?
No, I think it's been fun to chat and talk you know, the Culinary Institute's definitely a wonderful place for food enthusiasts to come and learn and speak to other people who have interests along those lines. And it's just, you know, it's constantly evolving and challenging yourself. So I think covered a lot of that.
Yeah, and as far as boot camps, you can go as what? As little like, is they have one-day boot camps, or what's the...
I think the shortest, we have two-day boot camp. And then it's like 2, 4, and 5 day boot camps.
Okay.
From your most basic skills, to what you had, the healthy and many, many others.
Sure.
So if they go online to the CIA website, what would be
CIAchef.edu, and then there's a link for food enthusiasts.
Well, I did get a quick learning on how to cut with a knife when I was chopping something up, and no, you don't do it that way. You got it. Otherwise,
use a finger.
Well, no, that wasn't the problem. It was like I'm now getting the I don't remember whether it was like parsley or something, and it's going into the cutting board, and I'm losing.
yep.
As opposed to, you know, and it was like this sort of gliding kind of thing. I'm going, oh, all right. That's how you do it. Because I'm always making some assumption that my knife isn't sharp enough. You know. But now that I have a three-sided diamond knife sharpener.
Oh, that's right.
I guess I can really sharpen the knife pretty well and do it right. So. Well, I absolutely thank the both of you for coming on for this amount of time too.
Oh, our pleasure.
I mean, I had a great time here. I learned a lot. I learned a lot at the boot camp. I would definitely recommend it to anyone, particularly like, yeah, you don't have to. And here was the thought that I had. I said, oh, you know, is everybody here? They all like chefs. They all know how to cook. And not necessarily. You just, you know, if you have some, I guess, some basic cooking skills, then, you know, boot camp is a great thing. You're not necessarily learning from, you know, how to boil water.
Exactly.
Right. So, I think another thing for people listening, maybe considering one of the boot camps or the enthusiast classes, is the chef instructor with their helpers. They they lead you every step of the way. There's nothing unsafe. You learn so much.
They're the
conductor. You know, we want you to have a good time, but we also want you to be in a professional environment. We run it like that, and you get a taste of reality. We say we're going to be done by this time, and we are done. And there's
and you turn around,
there's a table full of food. You say, where'd that all come from, right?
Yes, yes, and that's true. I was the whole thing was phenomenal, and then you added the demos, having the demos, and I think just like it was all great. It was just a great learning
experience.
And the timelines.
Did you get to do the timelines?
The what?
The rest of the timelines. Write the timeline with the rest of the group.
No.
Okay, well, from the first day, we teach them how to write timelines and certain things about the recipes, and we explain it in the first lecture, also everything that has to take place in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And each day, it gets more professional. It becomes more efficient, everything that gets done. And by the end of 3 or 4 days, people go away saying, wow, I feel like a professional now, you know.
Yeah.
And that's our job, you know. We've been doing that all our lives as chefs, and so we kind of make it look easy, so people can be comfortable when they come to the CIA. It's not like, oh my God, I can't do that. I don't even know how to cut something with a knife. I'll probably cut myself. That doesn't happen. You have a good time.
Well, with me at home, between my New Wave oven and my Vitamix. I'm going through all the quick stuff. I don't want to have to think. Let's just throw it in the New Wave oven and let it all get cooked. And by the way, one of the things I tried recently was I got a fresh killed chicken and cooked it in the New Wave oven versus, you know, the typical thing chicken you'd get at the Stop and Shop or whatever. And it really makes a difference, having a fresh killed chicken on the taste of a chicken.
Right, because you're almost in that neighborhood. You could go and buy the chicken and take it home and do it yourself.
Yeah, well, don't tell Esther that.
I didn't tell
Esther that that I had a fresh killed chicken. I didn't want to, you know, want her to get, you know, kind of upset because she was. Oh, she just heard me. I'm sorry. Okay. Again, I thank you both again, Michael, Chefsky. Say call you.
Chefsky will work. That's right.
Yeah. I'll see you guys, I guess, in the spring. And in the meantime, you'll have fun with my blog.
Oh, we sure will. And,
yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Heather, for joining us. And, Merle, it was really, really a lot of fun having you in the class. Thank you for letting me get a couple words in on that day, you know.
I'm glad you.
I haven't known you as long as your listeners, you know.
Yeah. I'm glad you have a sense of humor.
Oh, I was I being funny? Hey, listen, everybody have a great weekend.
Yeah.
I hope the listeners had a good time as well, and look forward to seeing everybody up at the CIA. And you can always email me. You know, they can get the email from you, Chefsky, I can always send you recipes if you need it, et cetera. Keep in touch.
Okay, I will.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a great
evening.
Weekend. Okay, bye-bye.
And
bye-bye.
You guys too. Bye now, folks. Bye.
Yeah, that was really cool, wasn't it? Really cool. Well, I guess it's time for me to end the show. And don't know what I'm doing next week, but I will be going off to Shreveport. In the meantime, I want to just say good night, good morning, or wherever you are to everybody.